This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. On the program this afternoon, a conversation for animal lovers. We're about to hear how a writer by the name of Bob Tart went from a city guy to a married country guy to a married country guy with a family of feathered and furry friends. Bob Tart is the author of Enslaved by Ducks, How One Man Went from Head of Household to Bottom of the Pecking Order. The book begins with a cast of characters, human and animal. There are more animal characters than human folks. Here are just a couple of the names from the cast of animal characters: Binky, Stanley Sue, Chester, Agnes, Blabby and Wingding, Haley and Hazel. It all began with Binky, who was one troublemaker of a bunny. Listeners, I invite your questions for Bob Tart. I also invite your animal stories. Join us with a telephone call. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Bob Tart is a freelance writer who has written for many publications, including The Beat magazine, The Boston Globe, The Whole Earth Review, and the Miami New Times. He and his wife, Linda, live in the countryside in Michigan with a whole crew of animals. You can take a look at them on this website, www.enslavedbyducks.com. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Bob's book is published by Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill. Bob, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Celeste. Thanks for letting me be on your show.
Oh, well, it all started with Binky, as I mentioned. You described him as a belligerent bunny, but he was awfully cute.
He was cute from a distance. You couldn't get too close. He didn't really encourage anybody to pet him. He was more involved in his projects, like chewing electrical cords, constantly escaping from the backyard pen no matter what I did to try to rabbit-proof it, and also going behind the wall in the basement. So he was best appreciated from a distance.
Yeah. Nonetheless, you bonded.
I'm afraid I did.
Yeah. And since Binky, there have been other rabbits in the family. What would you like to say about them?
Everyone has been a step up from Binky, or several steps up from Binky, but they're all a little bit hard to handle. I mean, you really have to just decide that the property value of your house is going to go down if you get a rabbit and let it run around the house, because we've lost a lot of the nap from the carpeting in our living room, and woodwork has been chewed here and there, and lamps shorted out. So you have to really love rabbits to put up with them, and I think we're probably on our seventh or eighth rabbit right now.
Yeah. How companionable are they?
They can be very nice. In fact, we were surprised. We just got a new one named Frida, and within, one day, she was already snuggling up against us on the floor, and so that's really pretty good, and she's very good about getting petted, and they're very smart animals, but they don't act like dogs or cats because they're prey animals, and so they're a lot less demonstrative than cats or dogs.
Yeah. If someone listening this afternoon has been thinking about adopting a rabbit, besides knowing what the species is all about, that it's a prey animal, what advice would you have for him or her?
Well, you just have to be patient, and you also have to understand you can't discipline a rabbit like you can discipline a dog or a cat. You can't train them that way, although I don't know how well you can discipline a cat. But the best way to keep a rabbit from doing something bad is just move the bad thing out of the way.
Yeah.
Just, you know, try to circumvent the behavior in that way. And also, they're not really very long-lived animals compared to dogs or cats, too. So it's kind of hard when you get really attached to them, and they last maybe 8 to 10 years.
Yeah. Can you work with them with rewards?
I have heard you can. but I can't say we've been too lucky on that account. Although at night, my wife likes to give them oatmeal. And when they hear her shaking the oatmeal in the dish, they usually will go right to their cage. It's not a loud sound, but, you know, they have big ears, so they respond pretty well to that.
The better to hear you with. You mentioned they're not long-lived animals. And one of the things that you write about in this book, Enslaved by Ducks, is the close connections we can develop with animals and the grief we suffer when they die. And the death of a rabbit named Bertha really hit you hard.
Yeah, it did pretty much. It happened while my wife was out of town, and Bertha had been pretty sick for quite a while. She had a parasite. Bertha was an outdoor rabbit. Somebody, I don't mean she was a wild rabbit, but she was somebody's pet rabbit that was just released into a neighborhood. And by the time we got her, she was on something like a 30-day cycle with some sort of parasite, and they were never really able to cure that. And so she developed some kind of nerve damage, and she went downhill over the course of the summer. So very nice rabbit.
Yeah. Today, how many animals are in the Tartt household?
Let me estimate.
Okay.
Over 30.
Wow.
Many of them are outdoors.
Right.
The ducks, geese, and hens. Although I have known people who have kept ducks indoors as pets, I wouldn't recommend it.
No.
But it's been done.
Yeah. Well, these critters in the house, do they get along?
It's very complicated. At least the two rabbits we have now get along. But at one point we had three rabbits. None of them could be in the same room at one time. And so it was constant juggling, putting up a little board as a barrier between one room or another. And, boy, I tell you, if you want your life to be taken over by schedules, get three rabbits who don't get along, because you will soon find yourself segmenting the day into when you're letting this animal out or when you're letting that animal out.
Oh, wow.
And also with the birds, we've had some problems, too, because we have a dove named Howard who does not get along with my African gray parrot, Stanley Sue, and they cannot be out together because there's a possibility that the parrot will go after the dove. And, in fact, the dove, Howard is a very nice, personable bird, but Howard doesn't realize that he doesn't really have the equipment to go one-on-one with a parrot.
Yeah.
And so a couple of times he's gone after Stanley Sue and has ended up in the vet. We're very careful now that they are never out together, and, you know, we really keep a good watch on them.
Stanley Sue started out as Stanley.
Yes. When we got Stanley, the woman who sold him to us, she was a nurse, and she was moving to California. She introduced the bird to us as Stanley, and that's what we thought Stanley was. But at one point, we took our bird to the vet, and our veterinarian just happened to ask us if we wanted DNA testing to find out Stanley's gender. And we thought, okay, you know, we'll go along with that, never dreaming that it would turn out that Stanley was a female. So rather than calling Stanley a different name, I just borrowed my wife's middle name. Since she took my last name when we got married, I thought it was only fair that someone got part of her name. So Stanley became Stanley Sue, and she's been happy with that.
Yeah, and it's only fair since she dragged you into this whole thing.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I wouldn't have any of these animals if it were not for Linda.
Yeah. She must be quite the woman. She loves animals, and she's always lived in the country. And so her philosophy is, if you got the space and you got the time and, you know, you got a pretty good-sized heart, you got to have animals.
She still can't understand why we don't fill the barn up with animals. If it were up to Linda, we would have goats and pigs. I mean, we might even have them in the house. And just all kinds of other animals. She has frequently said that she wanted a donkey, but, you know, we have enough problems just caring for animals that are smaller than us and can't really hurt us too badly, so I don't think I want any animal that would outweigh us.
Yeah. Chapter 4 begins, "No more animals," I told Linda. And this is when you were at 1, 2, 3, 4, a cat, two parrots, and a canary.
Yeah, that just shows you what a person of weak will that I am, because Linda was constantly able to talked me into getting more animals, and I have to admit a lot of the animals just sort of charmed me also. So my weak will was easily bent to be subjugated by the various animals.
Yeah.
And some of them also I didn't think would be any trouble at all. I thought, I thought ducks would be no trouble because ducks live outdoors, and what trouble could they be? And it's true that they don't need companionship, but they need things like a pool to swim around in, even when it's the dead of winter. And twice a day we go out, even when it's below zero, and chip the ice out of their swimming pools, drag a hose out from the basement, and fill both pools with water. Well, both pools in the pen behind the house. We also have two pools behind the barn, so that's four pools to be filled up every day. And it always tickles me. It can be below zero, and we will look out our window, and you know, we'll be huddling wrapped in blankets, and the ducks, instead of going into a shelter which we had built for them recently, they'll be in the pool, swimming, enjoying the water.
Yeah. You didn't think ducks were going to be any trouble, but you didn't think all the way back, all along, you didn't think Binky was going to be a problem either.
No, I had no idea what it was like. When I was a boy, we had a beagle, and I had a roommate who's also in the book, Bill Holm, who had a cat, and so I figured, you know, that was my range of experience with animals, and so I just thought a rabbit would be sort of like a cat. I didn't realize how very different these animals are from dogs and cats, and the various challenges with keeping them.
Yeah. Bob, does anybody ever say to you, you're nuts?
Constantly. In my family. I say that to Linda. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the animals we've taken in the last few years have been orphans, and so that's one reason we're taking them in, too, is to help them out. And for the past three or four summers now, we've also raised and released orphan songbirds, too. So if it isn't enough with all these animals, we had a cage full of 10 starlings at the beginning of the summer, and that'll absolutely drive you crazy.
What's their status today?
Well, they're released.
They're released?
And happy. Oh, sure.
Great.
Sure. Yeah, we only kept them a few weeks.
Yeah. Wildlife rehabilitation, how did you get involved in that? And maybe you'd tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we found four turkeys alongside the road a few years ago, and they looked like wild turkeys. And one seemed to be injured, so we stopped the car. And instead of running away from us like the turkeys that wander across our property do, these actually came up and started pecking our shoes. And to make a long story short, we found out that some people in the neighborhood had raised 32 domestic turkeys and just let them go, thinking that they would blend in with the wild turkey population. And, of course, they had no survival skills at all. And when we had problems with one of those turkeys, Linda found the name of a wildlife rehabber in Grand Rapids and gave her a call, and that's kind of where the whole thing started. Linda struck up a friendship with her, and not too long after that, we took in our first couple of starlings.
Yeah. You know, this idea of people just, you know, having domesticated animals and then just thinking, oh, well, just leave them out on their own. And I'm wondering also out there in the country, and probably folks know about you. I don't want to tell our listeners where you're located necessarily.
It's in the book.
Okay.
Lowell, but so that's okay.
But do you have problems with people, you know, asking you to take in animals or just leaving them on your doorstep?
No, because our house is a little bit hard to find. We don't really have neighbors. We have trees for neighbors, and you have to really know where we are to know where the house is.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have friends calling sometimes and saying, I just brought in an injured goldfinch. What should I do with it? And sometimes we'll run and pick it up, and then we'll take it over to the rehabbers that we know, the experts on it, because we're just helpers.
Yeah.
And so we haven't had to really deal with injured birds before. We have just dealt with baby birds that we feed, and then we get them eating insects on their own, and then we release them.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Bob Tart is our guest this afternoon. He's a freelance writer. He has written a book about life on in the country in Michigan, and it's all about living with animals. The title of the book, Enslaved by Ducks, How One Man Went from Head of Household to Bottom of the Pecking Order. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with your questions, with your comments, with your animal stories. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, are you talking to us from your house today?
Yes, I am, and I am upstairs, out of range of animal sounds. If I were in the living room, you would be hearing Howard the Dove cooing right now.
Yeah.
And you would probably hear our little pocket parrot, Ollie. I can hear him chirping right now. He just about drove us crazy in the beginning with his constant chirps and squawks. And you might hear some of the other birds, too.
Yeah. Ollie's quite the obstreperous character.
Yes, and he, we've had him almost 12 years now, and he has not mellowed one little bit. There is hardly a meal we have that he doesn't ruin by throwing a tantrum or throwing food. And because parrots, you should not feed them simply seeds. Parrots in the wild have access to a lot of vegetation and fruits and things like that. So it's really good to feed parrots people food along with their seeds and, you know, other vitamins. And so they want to eat when we eat because they're very social animals. So a meal at our house is kind of like being on a merry-go-round. Linda and I are constantly jumping out of our chairs and running around the table, giving Dusty, that's Linda's African gray parrot, something to eat, or my African gray parrot, Stanley Sue, or Ollie. He's a little Brotogarus pocket parrot. So, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, and how do you juggle the out-of-the-cage time for the birds?
Ollie doesn't. It's funny. The funny thing about our parrots is that they are all really good flyers, but they don't like to fly. I never really understand that because Stanley will be across the room, and I will say, she's very smart. African grays are incredibly smart, and I'll say to her, Stanley, go to your cage, and I'll give you some juice. Now, she could just fly and get there instantly, but instead, she slowly toddles across the floor, gets to her cage, climbs the cage stand, climbs the bars, and then gets to the top of her cage. So occasionally, she will fly up to Howard's cage, and that's our dove. And we still thought Howard was safe. We put a towel on top of the cage so she couldn't land on top. But last spring, she managed to have a little fight with Howard while clinging to the side bars of his cage. And the poor guy wound up at the vet again. So now I had to build sort of a little hardware cloth cage to fit over his cage. So when Stanley's out, he's kind of double shielded against her.
Little chain mail thing going
exactly.
There.
And he can still see out it, so he's pretty happy.
Stanley Sue was a pretty shy bird when you got her. Sounds like she's come out of her shell very nicely.
Yes. African gray parrots tend to be sort of nervous. And there's Congo African grays and Timna African grays. Timnas are a little smaller. And they're shyer. And I will bet it took Stanley a full year to come out of her shell. It was a couple of weeks before she would hop up on our hands. But before she really acted completely at ease with us, it was about a year.
Well, you know, there's a wonderful book about a woman who's an ornithologist who wrote a book about her parrot
mm-hmm.
and her work. And I know you mention her in the book. Do you, off the top of your head, do you know her name?
It's called The Parrot
Who Owns Me.
And it's, I think it's Joanna Berger.
Yeah, she was on the show a couple years ago when that book first came
out.
Oh,
that's great. That's a wonderful book.
Oh, it is terrific. And speaking of Stanley Sue and his, or her, excuse me.
we get confused, too.
Her, you know, she's not so interested in flying. I believe that the parrot in The Parrot Who Owns Me walked upstairs and then slid down the banister.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. All kinds of...
And Linda's bird, Dusty, surprised me once. We've had Dusty about 2 years now. I didn't know Dusty was out, and I was minding my own business. Upstairs where I am now, I was typing something. I was writing a music review, and all of a sudden I felt a very unwelcome, sharp pain in my ankle. And there was Dusty. He had walked all the way upstairs just to come over and to give me a nice little bite. So, and it's funny because I actually have a pretty good relationship with Dusty. When Dusty is in his cage, I can put my fingers in the cage. I can hand him just the tiniest little treats and even never even think that he would bite me. But once he's out of the cage, he really swaggers. And if I'm barefoot, I'm in big trouble. I have to just get out of the way.
Ouch.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember the parrot who owns me, that Joanna's bird. I think she had her bird at the university where she was teaching. And I think she said that it would fly down the hallways at times. And I can't remember very many instances at all where Dusty has flown. He might sort of fly and hop, you know, 2-3 feet if he wants to get up on the bed and terrorize our cat. But other than that, no, he's a pedestrian.
Yeah. And Joanna, in that book, she also writes about how that her bird is her bird. I mean, that bird is devoted to her.
Yeah, a lot of parrots bond with one person. And I have heard it said, although it's not really a hard and fast rule, that male parrots often prefer female owners and female parrots often prefer male owners. And it has worked out that Stanley Sue has bonded with me and Dusty has bonded with my wife. But that also may be have to do with who pays the most attention to the bird and things like that. But it is interesting that they like to focus. Unless you really work with them a lot, they do tend to focus on one person and then sort of choose that one person.
Yeah, I remember a story, someone getting a parrot because the child insisted, you know, I really like this bird, and the family said, okay. And the parrot wasn't interested in the child at all. It was mom's bird.
Yeah. I can see that happening.
Yeah.
There are some parrots like cockatoos that are very good with a wide range of people. We had we have to advertise for pet sitters sometimes because if we go on a trip, you know, somebody has to be here or come here 3 times a day to take care of the animals.
Oh, my gosh, I would think you'd need a crew.
Oh, it's amazing. We've done the best with people who have grown up on farms. Because they come over here and they say, oh, this is no problem at all. But this woman brought over a cockatoo, and the cockatoo was a large bird, and I was afraid of it. And we always tell people to keep away from our parrots because we don't want them to get nipped. But this bird instantly landed on my arm and you know, let me pet it, and it's just sort of an interesting experience. So people who want a bird like that for the family, I think a lot of times they're good getting a small bird like a parakeet or a cockatiel, or else a bird like a cockatoo that does really well with a wide range of people and is not afraid of strangers.
Yeah, and parrots, they have such a long life. That's really a commitment.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. It's kind of nice in a way because after some of our other pets get old, you know, we have a cat that's 12. Howard the Dove is 12. And I look at them, and sometimes I think, you know, gosh, we don't have too many years left. And it is kind of nice to think of parrots as a true lifelong companion, as long as you keep them healthy and happy.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about the parrots now quite a bit. And we talked about a couple of bunnies. And there are other animals here in the cast of characters, and I'm wondering if these other characters, the ducks, the geese, and the turkeys in particular, have as much personality as Binky and Bertha and Stanley Sue, Ollie and Dusty.
They absolutely do. They it is amazing that when you pay attention to the different animals, that every one of them has a fully developed personality, and every one of them is completely different than any of the others. We have these ducks called Muscovy ducks. They look sort of like a cross between a goose and a duck. And we have had about four of them. We've got two of them right now. And some of them have been, we had one named Hector who liked to fly up and perch on Linda's shoulder. And I was really shocked when I came out of the house once and saw a large duck sitting on her shoulder. But he could be quite, I don't want to say violent, because aggressive. He could be aggressive at times, and he might come after me and, you know, give me a few nips. But I have another Muscovy, a male named Victor, and he is just the nicest bird. He's pretty docile. And we have another one named Ramon, and he is even more docile. And they've all been around people, so I don't think it really has to do with, you know, socialization to people. I think it's just a matter of personality.
Yeah. Here in the cast of characters are two geese, Liza and Haley.
Yes.
Liza, lap-sitting African goose, sister to Haley.
Yes. Those were also a couple of animals we took in. Linda saw an ad in a local newspaper here in Lowell that a woman had to get rid of some of her animals because she had lost her job and couldn't afford to take care of them. We went over there wanting a couple of ducks. And the woman told us rather sadly that the ducks had grown up with these geese, and couldn't we take geese as well? I never wanted geese because I always thought of geese as, you know, aggressive animals. When I was in graduate school in San Francisco, I was at Golden Gate Park once, and a goose came up on the grassy bank and just walked over and bit me, and that was sort of enough to discourage me from having a goose. But I saw these geese, and they were just so nice. They came right over to the woman who owned them and ate out of their hand, and they ended up being like that with us. It was just a matter of a couple weeks, and I would sit in the backyard, and Liza was the more outgoing one. And Liza would come right up and just about sit in my lap.
Yeah.
And they can be very long-lived, too. We still have Liza and Haley, and I read a little while ago that geese can live up to 30 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're not quite as friendly with us as they used to be, simply because we have more ducks and geese outdoors now. We have five geese right now, and so, you know, they're flock animals, and they're more attached to members of their flock than they are to us, which is as they should be because they're happier that way.
Right. Bob Tart is our guest here on the Afternoon Magazine today, and he is the author of Enslaved by Ducks, How One Man Went from Head of the Household to Bottom of the Pecking Order. If you'd like to take a look at some of Bob's furry and feathered friends, well, go to the website www.enslavedbyducks.com. Really nice website, by the way.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
The numbers to give us a call this afternoon and talk to our guest, Bob Tart, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. Questions, comments, animal stories, all invited. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Well, how do you keep all these guys healthy? Yeah, and I guess the question is when, you know, when they do need a little attention, you know, how do you...
We take them to the vet.
How do you wrangle them into the vet?
Yeah, the hardest animal to get to the vet was a turkey. When we had a turkey, Hazel, who was attacked by one of the other turkeys, and she was blinded temporarily. And to get her to the vet, we had to put her in a recycling bin. And then Linda and I carried the, because she weighed about 30 pounds. And you don't really appreciate how strong these animals are until you pick them up and they start flapping their wings.
Yeah.
They can knock you right over. So we put her in a recycling bin. I took one end, Linda took the other, and we took Hazel out to the car and drove her to the vet. And I tell you, it was interesting in the waiting room that day because there were people in there with dogs and cats, and there we sat with a turkey and a recycling bin.
Well, I have one cat, and he is a handful to wrangle into the vet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Cats can be very bad. I was just going to ask, you put him in him or her in a cat carrier?
Yeah, but you got to do it real carefully. You can't let him hear the sound of the gate opening. So you have to, like, very quietly open that up.
Yeah.
And then you have to be, you know, he can tell, too, if something's up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so then you kind of
I think they can
get him
tell
in there.
From the sounds of our voice sometimes.
Yeah.
Intonation, they
sure
know when something's up.
Yeah. Let's talk with a listener. Caller on a cell phone, line 4. Good afternoon.
Hi there.
Hi.
My name is Whitney. I'm really enjoying your show. I've always had wanted to have a farm and animals. Well, it came true for me, and my husband turned out to be a bigger nut for animals than I was, and we ended up with 7 goats and 2 lambs and a sheep and a cow that was rambunctious. We didn't know that you're not supposed to feed them oats when they're young, where the expression "full of oats" came from.
Oh my! What does that do?
He thought he was a dog. Oh, he was hilarious. He'd come up and greet my husband at the gate, and my husband would drive the car in, and then Bucky would run right alongside the car, and then my husband would have to get out and rub his neck. And it was just, you know, it was great. Unfortunately, we had to move and had to give away all of our little animals, but we did eat the lambs.
Oh, well, that's one way of getting rid of them, I guess.
Well, we had bunnies. Oh, I brought the bunnies home from the shelter, so this woman was dropping off 7 bunnies, and I said, oh, no, let me have them.
Oh, that's so awfully good of you.
Oh, it was great. It was great. It was a wonderful time. And when we retire, we plan on doing it again.
Oh, that's great. I just have one question about the goats. Did you have trouble keeping the goats in their pens?
No, not at all. We had a big running area for them, and they had lots and lots of food. We fed everybody grain. And so, you know, I did have a goose that fell in love with me, and he tried to grab me when I went in to feed him. You know how geese mate.
And, oh, yes.
Yeah, and he was always grabbing hold of me.
Well, that may be why our Muscovies act that way sometime. I'm not sure. I think they get a little confused.
That could be it. But God bless you. I think that's just wonderful.
Thank you so much.
I wish I could do the same right now. You've made me very homesick for all my little boo-boos. Thanks a lot for the show. I really enjoy it.
Thanks for calling, Whitney. I appreciate it.
It really, this kind of, it's like a fever, I guess, huh? It really takes hold. And
well, it can. Yeah. I mean, if you get interested in the animals, you can get very attached to them. And, you know, they are just interesting to watch. I never realized how much there was to a hen or a duck and what fully developed personalities that they had. You know, you just sort of think of them as, I always thought of them as sort of faceless masses, but they're all individuals.
Yeah. For somebody who's interested in a particular, I don't know how to put this. I suppose it depends. There's so many resources out there. You know, you talk about Guide to a Well-Behaved Parrot. Are there some books out there that you would recommend to folks who are interested in becoming an animal, you know, compatriot?
I guess it depends on what kind of animal.
Sure.
And one thing that's helped me a lot is going online and using news groups.
Uh-huh.
Because there are lots of animal news groups. There are the Usenet news groups. Those are sort of the old news groups. And, of course, on Yahoo, there's many, many news groups developed to different pets. And so you don't even have to go to just a broad parrot news group. You can go to a African gray news group or a cockatoo news group, and it is just an amazing source of information. Almost any question that you have, if you're patient, you can find somebody out there who can answer that for you about a particular pet. We lost one of our rabbits this summer, and we were left with just one, Rudy, and Rudy was lonely. And we were thinking, well, we heard that chinchillas are quite long-lived animals, and they seem to be rather rabbit-like. Maybe we could get a chinchilla as a friend for Rudy. And so I went on a rabbit news group and asked if there was anyone that had rabbits and chinchillas, and sure enough, I got some really long and detailed answers, and they basically said that they're not incredibly compatible. So we did not get a chinchilla, but if you have internet access, that's a great way to do it.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier in our conversation, Bob, that you were at work writing a music column when somebody came and gave you a little nip.
Yeah.
But this is interesting. It was writing about music that led you to write this book.
Well, it was in the sense that I really got my experience writing by writing for the Beat magazine. And I've done a column for them since 1989. And it's just kind of a good discipline to do something like a column where you, you know, have to be a little creative and have to meet deadlines. And also, maybe what you're referring to is just the fact that the animals started worming their way into my music column.
I don't know how you work animal stories into a column about world music.
Yeah, I have a very forgiving editor, and she always sort of encouraged me. And so I would sometimes write a little essay at the front of my column, and sometimes the essay really didn't have anything to do with music at all. And after a while, I found myself writing about geese and ducks and rabbits and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to check out Beat Magazine and look for your column.
Oh, okay. I have another website. It's just
www.technobeat.com.
That's the name of my column. And all of my columns since 1990 are archived there.
Okay, excellent. I'm glad I asked you about that.
Okay.
Technobeat.com.
That's right.
And then there's Enslaved by Ducks. .com.
Right, and that's devoted to this book, and I have some reviews up. There aren't too many reviews out yet because the book won't be released until November 7th, although some online booksellers are shipping it right now.
Yeah. Well, the pictures on your duck site are just terrific.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we've run out of time, and I want to thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon, and the best to you and that crazy family you've got.
Well, thank you so much, Celeste. I really enjoyed
it. Okay, and say hello to Linda for us.
I certainly will.
Bob Tart has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. If you're an animal lover, you will like Enslaved by Ducks, How One Man Went from Head of the Household to Bottom of the Pecking Order. And you can find him on the web. You can take a look at some of these critters at www.enslavedbyducks.com.